Thank you for listening to the Alliance Church podcast. We desire to connect you with God and one another, whether here in Wisconsin or around the world. Let's listen into this week's message.
Proverbs, ancient wisdom for modern living. That's where we're living all the month of August. My name's Brandon. I'm the lead pastor out here, and want to say hi to you if maybe this is your first time checking us out, or you're newer, or if you've been coming here for like 6 months and you're like, dude, that guy still hasn't said hi to me. Come up and say hi to me afterwards. I hang out right there all the time. Come out and say hi. But no, for real, if you're checking us out, I'm honored that you'd come hang out with us. I just view you as a guest and privileged to have you here. And I hope this is an enjoyable experience for you. And I know checking out churches for the first time is always an awkward thing. Doesn't matter who you are, Christian or not. Checking out a church for the first time is always awkward. So I pray that this place would be just like a little bit less awkward than you thought it would be. All right, this month we're spending time in the book of Proverbs, which, what on earth is the book of Proverbs? It's essentially a collection of wisdom sayings. If you've never read the Proverbs, I'd encourage you to check it out, because there's some really good stuff in here. I mean, the Proverbs touch on everything, basically everything you could ever go through in life. I feel like it's in there. It touches on money, it touches on relationships, touches on friendship, it touches on work ethic, touches on laziness, it touches on good manners, it touches on ethics, it touches on getting along, eternity. All sorts of stuff are in this book, Proverbs, and some good stuff. And you might wonder, where'd it all come from? Like, if you've never read Proverbs, I encourage you to maybe this month dive in and check it out a little bit and just start getting familiar with some of the stuff in there. But you might wonder, when you're reading these sayings, who wrote these things? Where'd this stuff come from? Well, the book of Proverbs says twice that Solomon was the author, or at least the one who collected a bulk of the content that's in here. Not all of it, but a bulk of it. And then Hebrew and Christian traditions affirm that. They say King Solomon was the guy who kind of put all this together. And you might go, well, that's cool. Who's King Solomon, and why should we care what he has to say about life? Well, according to the Old Testament, Solomon was the son of King David. And when he became king, God kind of pulls him aside and says, hey, why don't you ask me for anything? Ask me for anything you want. I'll give it to you. Now, he didn't ask, as he could have, for money or power or fame or good looks, or I don't know. And I don't know why he didn't ask for any of those things. Maybe he was already good looking and I was famous enough. Maybe he's an introvert, didn't want more fame. I don't know. But for whatever reason, Solomon decided, I'm going to ask God for wisdom. And so how the narrative goes is that Solomon said, God, I want wisdom with which to rule your kingdom. In other words, you're giving me a big job to do, and I want wisdom to do it well. I want to lead your people well, and I know I don't have what it takes to do it on my own, so would you give me wisdom on how to do that? And God was honored by that request, which shows us that that's a good thing to ask. It's a good thing to ask God for wisdom. It's a good thing to seek wisdom. And so God's honored by this request, and he grants it. He says, all right, I'll give you wisdom. And God gives Solomon wisdom. Now, it doesn't really say if God just uploaded it all instantaneously, miraculously to his brain all in one second, or if God, over the course of Solomon's life, God just kind of caused him to grow in wisdom. Either way, it doesn't really matter which one it was. Either way, Solomon eventually became known as the wisest man in the world. And so the Proverbs then, a collection of his sayings, could be called solid advice according to Solomon. And they're different than the rest of the Bible. The Proverbs, they're like, you know, they're not these long soliloquies. They're not paragraphs. They're not long dialogues, right? They read kind of like a Twitter feed, If you've ever read the Proverbs, you know what I'm talking about. They're just like a little short saying after another, one after another, and it's like they've got a character limit, usually two lines. And there's a lot of good stuff in there. And when you read through them, it's like nugget after nugget after nugget. And they're like little shots of espresso. Each proverb, each little two-lined proverb is like a little shot of espresso. It's powerful, it's dense. It's meant to be sipped each, like one at a time, not just, you know, line them up like, you know, shots at a frat party and just knocking them back. Proverbs are meant to take one at a time and sip on it. And if you try to read a bunch at once, you're not gonna get the jitters like you would if it was espresso, but you're gonna miss the point. Because it takes time for the point to kind of sink in. So instead of reading a huge chunk all at once, the Proverbs are kind of like a multivitamin. It's just like a little bit every day. And in that regard, Proverbs are different than kind of the rest of the Bible. And so I'm gonna treat them differently. Normally I would select a huge chunk. I'd select a good 3 to 5 verse paragraph, and I'd preach on one paragraph. I'm gonna preach on the Proverbs a little bit differently. I've selected 3 Proverbs, and I wanna look at each one of them one at a time, kinda let them stand by themselves, but you'll notice that they all kinda live in the same world. They all kinda revolve around a theme, and that theme has to do with kinda like relationships and communication. And there'll be one that talks about handling conflict, one that talks about engaging in debate, and one that talks about using humor. And none of them are comprehensive treatments on those topics. Each one of them is a profound little insight into that topic, though. And so I'd like to walk through the 3 of them, and I believe they come together and make a pretty important message, because relationships are the real ministry. What does God say is the most important thing? So, you know, someone comes up to Jesus and said, "Hey, Jesus, what's the most important commandment?" What does he say? You love God with everything you got, your heart, soul, mind, strength, so on, right? It sounds like a relationship to me. It starts with relationship. And then he says, and a second is like it. What's just as important as loving God with everything you got? Loving your neighbor, loving the people around us. That's relationships. Basically, every time God does something through someone, he does it through relationships. Like, if you're gonna live out the will of God here on this planet, in this zip code, it's gonna be through relationships. God rarely works through hermits. He always does it in between people. So relationships are important. They're a big deal. There's a lot on the line here. So here we go with the 3. Now, if this were like a cheesy video on the internet, and I was just trying to get you to click on it, I'd, you know, maybe title this like 3 mistakes that are killing your relationships, or do these 3 things and you'll be a relationship master, or I talked to a relationship pro and these are 3 things he never does, or old Jewish man totally shuts down jerks and clowns on relationships. I don't know what, but this isn't a thing on the internet, and I'm not trying to get you to click on it. So I'm gonna go with a very boring name here. Just 3, according to Solomon, 3 relationship mistakes to avoid. 3 relationship mistakes to avoid. So here we go. We'll start with the first one. First piece of advice that I've got you from Solomon here. Number 1, leave the stray dog alone. Leave the stray dog alone. You're going, what on earth does that have to do with relationships? Doesn't make any sense, Chief. Okay, what you'll notice is that, and this is common in the Proverbs, he's gonna take a sensory experience and attach it to an abstract idea, right? So instead of just telling you what you need to know, he gives you something you can visualize, an image, and then he says, so that helps us understand it. And what happens there? A, we understand it better. 2, it sticks with us better, right? He does this all the time. Solomon and the rest of the writers of the Proverbs were brilliant at using imagery like this. So he's gonna use this imagery of a stray dog. Check this out. Let's go to Proverbs 26. We'll start at verse 17. He says, like one who grabs a stray dog by the ears. is someone who rushes into a quarrel, not their own. You get that imagery? Like one who grabs a stray dog by the ears. Now, don't think of a cute puppy here that's like hungry and like American. And we're like, oh. No, man, this was written like 3,000 years ago in the Middle East. Times were tough for dogs. Like imagine like a scrappy, tough, his ear is like torn, maybe one eye, I don't know. He's been through some fights because that's what it took to stay alive. You don't want to mess with this dog. Now picture grabbing that dog by the ear. Two questions. What happens? What's going to happen to you? Just someone say it out loud. You grab that dog, you grab that stray dog by the ear, what happens? Well, you get bit. Absolutely. Second question, was that avoidable? Absolutely. You're just getting bit for no reason. And here's one more question. Was anything gained? No. I mean, it's not like he caught a chicken that's gonna taste good if he fries it or give him eggs and fries those. Or a cow that's gonna give him cheese curds and hamburgers. You know what I'm saying? Like, he is a stray dog. So you're getting bit for no reason and you don't gain anything. And the point this proverb's trying to make is that when we rush into conflict that's not our own, we create unnecessary problems. It's rushing into to conflict or a quarrel or a dispute or a fight that's not our own is problematic for a number of reasons. Here's three of them. One, you can't resolve someone else's fight. You think about that. Like if you're in a fight with him, I can't settle that fight for you guys. If you two can resolve that conflict. I cannot resolve someone else's conflict. Right? So you can't resolve someone else's fight. It's problematic to rush into conflicts that aren't yours anyway, aren't yours to begin with. It's problematic for a second reason. We never got all the facts. Think about that. When we rush in to get involved in a dispute, in a conflict, in a debate, whatever the thing is, we've never got all the facts. And when you rush in to involve yourself with a conflict that's not yours, we have a really hard time seeing clearly simply because we don't, like, division's magnetic, isn't it? Like, it just kind of draws us in faster than we can even process the situation. You ever find yourself listening to someone and being like, yes, that guy is the worst. You know, they're just talking about all the stuff that the other guy did wrong. And you're like, oh my gosh, I didn't know he was the worst person on the planet. We need to kill that guy. How fast can you dig a hole in your yard? We need to bury this guy. You're like, pretty real soon you're getting fiery against the person. And then you hear the other person's side of the story and you're like, how? Oh, well, you know what? That actually kind of makes sense. Guess you're not as terrible as I thought you were. Guess there are two sides to this story. Meanwhile, we've already said a bunch of stuff about the person that we can never take back. You get bit for no reason. It hurts our relationships for no reason, right? It's hard to be helpful in conflict when you're not seeing clearly, and when you rush into it, we don't see clearly. We don't know both sides of the story. The third reason this is problematic is because it's almost impossible to be unbiased. When you rush into involve yourself in a quarrel or a conflict that's not your own, it's almost impossible. Not only do we not all have all the facts, it's almost impossible to be unbiased. Like, it's really hard to not take the side of the person we care about the most. Right? Parents, we all do this. My little guy, he would never do that. Like, well, now at school, your little guy is the center too. So, what this proverb's getting at is not that we should never involve ourselves with other people's conflict. That's not what it's saying. Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers. To be someone who helps others make peace, you've got to roll up your sleeves and get involved in their conflict. It says, don't rush into it. Meaning, don't be overly eager to dive into it, and don't dive into it hastily. Don't jump into a fight that two other people are having or two other parties are having too hastily. So I think this proverb wants to teach us that mediators of reconciliation must rise above the fray Suspend judgment where the facts are not known. Avoid drawing conclusions that aren't substantiated. Avoid forming false hypotheses or unfounded hypotheses. Strive to see both sides. And if that's not your intention, it's better just to walk away. Like, peacemakers have to be patient. You hear that? Peacemakers have to be patient. Peacemakers have to be committed to being good listeners. They got to know both sides of the story, and that takes time. And so this proverb would teach us that, and it would also teach us that we should know when to just not involve ourselves with a certain conflict. Think about this. Even Jesus himself refused to be judge and arbiter in disputes that were not critical to his own mission. You ever read that in Luke chapter 12? Jesus even discerned when he should or shouldn't involve himself in other people's interpersonal conflict. And Christians should be discerning in the same way. Now think about this quickly in the context of like social media. No one's got all the facts, but everyone's got a hot take, don't they? We love having the take. How many times do you see Christians hop on social media really quick to have a hot take on a current issue, only to find out that as the facts roll in, that take wasn't so hot? And what have they done in the meantime is tarnished their own witness and their own reputation for no reason. For what? For a stray dog. How many times do you see Christians, if there's ever a proverb that says Christians know when to stay out of the comment section. You know what I'm saying? It's this proverb. Know when to stay. How many times do you see Christians getting in the comment section and they're fighting just as nasty, being just as nasty as the non-Christians? For what? No one's mind is changed. The name of Christ is not glorified. The general public has one more reason to call Christians hypocrites. For what? A stray dog. So just keep in mind, know when to leave the stray dog alone. Don't grab a stray dog by the ears here. All right, the second little piece of advice from Solomon that I got for us is stay out of a fool's courtroom, or avoid, steer clear of a fool's courtroom. What do I mean by that? Here's the proverb. We'll go to 29 verse 9. He says, if a wise person goes to court with a fool, the fool rages and scoffs, and there is no peace. Think about that. If a wise person goes to court with a fool, what does the fool do in the courtroom? They rage and scoff, and there's no peace. So going to court here means, in this proverb, means trying to settle a matter in a civil manner. Does that make sense? So this could literally mean in an actual court of law, but this proverb should be taken as to speak symbolically of sorting things out rationally, having honest dialogue, coming to real resolution like decent human beings. And the fool in this case, This passage says the fool isn't interested in actual dialogue. The fool isn't actually interested in truth. What does it say they do? What does it say the fool does? It just rages and scoffs. Think about those two words. Rages, that means to rant loud. They can yell and then go on and they can be obnoxious and they can make a big fuss and they can be louder than you. But it's all emotion and sensation and no substance. They don't actually persuade, they just dominate. And the fool doesn't understand that just because you're the loudest in the room doesn't mean you're the smartest. Just because you're the loudest doesn't mean you're the rightest. So the fool rages. What else do? They scoff. That means to mock, to make fun of. It's talking about ad hominem. Attacking the person rather than the position, attacking their character rather than the content of their argument or their reasoning. right? It's in this case, the fool, they don't care about peace. They don't care about the relationship. They're willing to tear people down if it means they can win an argument. They say things rather than saying, I see what you're saying, but I think the flaw in your logic is fill in the blank. Instead of that, they can't say that. The fool in this proverb, that's not in their vocabulary. Instead, they say things like, how dumb can you be? Are you serious? What kind of moron, right? So this proverb, what it teaches us is it is good to have discernment in this area. It's good to be able to identify this pattern in someone, whether it's someone you're dealing with or within yourself. It's good to be able to identify the pattern of someone who just wants rage and scoff, doesn't actually care about truth or peace or the relationship, right? So let's think about the first one. What does this proverb teach us? I think one, have that discernment so that you can avoid ending up there. You can just avoid going there with someone else. If you realize, man, that person's not interested in actual dialogue here. They just want to use their emotion and their dominance and win an argument, and they want to rage and scoff. I'm just not going to go to that courtroom. I'm just not even going to go there. It's just pointless. I'm going to avoid that if possible. But I think that this proverb is better seen as a mirror than a set of glasses, a mirror to view ourselves rather than a set of lenses to view other people. I think this is good for us to have this discernment to be able to identify this tendency or this behavior in ourselves. Like, it's not good to love a debate, especially for the wrong reasons. Because, like, I think we all know the difference between genuine intellectual curiosity and being quarrelsome, to love a quarrel. Elsewhere in the Proverbs, it says, whoever loves a quarrel loves sin. It's not a good thing. And what's a quarrel? That word is kind of, think about, like, if you took pride and mockery and just mixed them all into a shouting match, that's a quarrel. And whoever loves that is, like, actually enjoys being the enemy of peace. It's really the opposite of the call of a Christian. So we got to know the difference within ourselves. We got to see this tendency. We got to know the difference between, like, what's worth fighting for and what is actually not that big of a deal. We got to know the difference between wanting to win an argument versus wanting to win a person. You process that? We got to be really honest with our own motives in any sort of debate. This doesn't mean avoid debate altogether, but we should audit our motives regularly in this context. I mean, like, a lot of passionate debate is just super narcissistic. Think about that. There's not too many faster ways you can make yourself look superior or more important than to win an argument. There's not too many ways to make yourself look more dominant. And I tell you, church, that an exercise of power, like winning an argument or being more dominant than another person or making yourself look smarter, an exercise of power is a poor substitute for finding your identity in Christ. This is a bad place to get your sense of self-worth. And I tell you, guys, like, if there's one of these proverbs I'm talking about that are like a mirror for me, it's this one right here. Like, reading this proverb for me is like looking at a mirror of Brandon Hillstead when I'm at my worst. When I get defensive, when I feel backed into a corner, when I feel like someone insults my intelligence, especially publicly, especially in a high stakes setting, I can let the big personality and the big mouth and the quick brain be pretty dominant, and so I can kind of control a situation to gain my own sense of significance. We don't want to be like that. You don't want to be like that, do you? I don't want to be like that. We don't want to be married to someone like that. We don't want to raise kids who are like that. We don't want to work for a boss that's like that. So two quick words of caution with this proverb in mind. First one, we've got to guard against looking down on the fool in this proverb. We've got to guard, like, think about the fool in this proverb. If you know someone who you're going, man, all they care about is ranting and scoffing. They're just trying to win the argument. And that person still bears the image of God. So we got to treat them respectfully. We can't stoop to their level and employ their tactics, either by marginalizing or demoralizing them. I tell you, there's something in us that wants that, though, isn't there? Like, don't we always cheer in the, when there's the moment in the movie where the bully gets humiliated publicly, or, man, it feels good to see, a loudmouth online just get put in their place or something like that. When part of us goes, yeah. Jesus sternly warns us against labeling someone, and that label is in a condemning way. Labeling someone, the word raka, which is Aramaic for fool. Jesus sternly warns us against treating someone, no matter how foolish their behavior is, as if they are worthless. And a second warning, so we use guard our heart in regards there. But the second caution, I guess, with this proverb in mind, in the courtroom of fools here, the internet is full of people who fit this description. The internet is full of professional ranters who have entire podcasts devoted to raging and scoffing. It gets a lot of clicks and makes them a lot of money. And it can be any number of topics. It's usually politics, though. And so I would say that if you listen to or follow ranters rage and scoff about whomever or whatever it is, you and you alone are responsible for what happens in your heart toward the people they're ripping on. It's really hard to mock someone and belittle them and degrade them and demoralize them and marginalize them and then lead them to Christ. Doesn't really work. So big picture, let's steer clear of the fool's courtroom. Two ways. One, discerning when someone is just wanting to rage and scoff and just not going there. Two, identifying that tendency within our own behavior. Last one here. Last little piece of advice from Solomon on relationships. Don't be a maniac archer. Don't be a maniac. That one's self-explanatory, right? We can just stop there and go eat some pulled pork. Listen, where does this come from? Let's go back to chapter 26, verses 18 and 19. Listen to this imagery. This is beautiful. He says, like a maniac shooting flaming arrows of death is one who deceives their neighbor and says, I was only joking. You process this imagery? The madman with a bow and arrow, and the arrows are on fire, and they're just, I don't know how a maniac would fire an arrow, I don't know, but they're just spraying them everywhere, indiscriminate of where these flaming arrows are land, and they have no regard for the damage they cause. So think about this, back in the time this was written, one of these flaming arrows lands on your roof, set your whole house on fire, lands in the field, it could burn up the village's food supply, there can be some serious damage, and here's this guy firing these things off and doesn't even care about the effect that it's having on those around them, wherever they land. The point of this proverb is saying, uncareful humor can cause serious damage. And this proverb would want to teach us that we have to be careful about our use of humor. Christians, we are supposed to take a higher level of responsibility for the effect of our words. A higher level. Jesus says, there'll be a day when not a careless word spoken will be unjudged. That's a terrifying concept. So we have to be careful about jokes, especially jokes that might cross the line, because it's universally understood that behind every joke, there's at least a little bit of truth, or at least the person who's telling it thinks there's a little bit of truth. Right, so think about this in a couple different situations. Think about the dad that constantly says things like, "Oh, you dummy, don't be a dummy," and then goes, "Oh, yeah, I was just joking." Here's a question. Do any of us, have we ever fully believed it when someone said, "I was just joking"? Has anyone ever gone genuinely, "Oh, you're joking. I get it. It means nothing. Keep making fun of my mom or the way I look or whatever. Go ahead. That's great." No, man, it hits us. Like that arrow hits us, and it doesn't matter how quick you pull it out, man, it leaves an impact. And we are responsible. Think about the archer. When they fire that arrow, they're responsible not just for what they mean for it to hit, but what it actually hits. Our words, we're responsible not just for our intention behind them, but for their actual real life effect. Like if I had the arrow here and I just wave it around, I'd fire it off and I shoot Ryan, all of a sudden Kelly's a widow and Davis is like, "You shot my dad." And I'm like, "Oh, I was just trying to hit the fly on the wall there. I was just joking." He's not gonna go, "Oh, well, in that case, all is well." In the same way, when we fire off a joke, when we send a joke out into the world, we are responsible for its effects. And one of the areas where this is maybe almost most accurate is online jokes. Like, is there an arena or a platform or a media for joking that is more disconnected from the effects of the joke than online? You post something, if it's belittling or tears someone down or whatever, we rarely see the people that get hurt by it. We rarely see or hear how it has hurt someone. So we gotta be careful with humor. We gotta be even careful about self-deprecating humor, where we make fun of ourselves. Think about why that is. You say, "Well, it's myself. Shouldn't I be able to make fun of whatever I want?" Well, there's a reason we get uncomfortable sometimes when people make fun of themselves. A little bit is okay. A little bit is if I forgot to, you know, do one of my buttons, I'm like, "Oh man, that's why I can't go outside without my wife checking me," or something like that. You know, a little bit's fine, right? But if I say make fun of my image, my intelligence, something about myself, what does that communicate? That if I disdain something in me, I also disdain something in you, the same thing. And you should too. So we gotta be careful with how we joke. That's it. That's all. This proverb, like the others, doesn't mean avoid humor entirely. I love to laugh. I love people in my life that make me laugh. Let's use humor well and be good stewards of it. It's a balm to the soul. I mean, man, if you can't laugh, you're gonna have a boring life. But you gotta use humor very carefully, and take special care to know that that humor isn't tearing other people down. And if you need any convincing, I'm willing to bet that every single one of us in this room has a painful memory of someone else cracking a joke at our expense. I'm willing to bet every single one of us in this room who's, let's say, over the age of 10 has a memory when someone said a joke and they said, "Oh, I was just joking." And it hit us hard. God is meticulously careful with his words, and we've got to be as well. God is meticulously careful with our hearts, and we've got to be meticulously careful with the hearts of others as well. Okay, so those are my little three proverbs for you from Solomon. Here's my challenge to you this week. When you find yourself interacting with either conflict debate, or humor. Examine your words in your heart in light of these proverbs. Process that. The stray dog teaches us about conflict. The fool's courtroom teaches us about debate. The maniac with the bow and arrow teaches us about the use of humor. This week, when you interact with any of those relational dynamics, ask yourself, is there a stray dog I'm grabbing by the ear here? Am I getting bit for no reason? Why am I diving into this conflict? Am I hearing both sides of the story? Maybe, am I going to court? Is this guy a fool and I just need to get out of the courtroom? Is he just wanting to rage and scoff? Or does he actually care about truth? Am I being the fool? Am I drawing people into my own little courtroom? Am I just trying to win arguments for whatever the case is? Or am I firing dangerous arrows off with these jokes? I think if we all commit to living out the stuff like this in the Proverbs that we find that instructs our day-to-day life and our relationships, we all do that, we're gonna be a church that does a little bit better with, you know what, a lot better with relationships than the average church. Just imagine a church that just is terrible in all three of these areas. There's nasty in conflict and terrible in debate, and they bowl people over and they shoot people with arrows and call it funny and da, da, da. None of us want to go to that church. But imagine a church that nails it in all three of these areas. That's the kind of church we all want to go to. I think that's the kind of church you want to go to. This kind of church I want to go to. So let's pray. Let's go have some fun at a picnic, and let's see if we can live a little bit more according to God's wisdom as found in the Proverbs. Lord, you call us to love you with everything we've got and love other people. That means relationships are the real ministry. If you're gonna do something here on earth, you usually like to do it through people in the context of relationships. In fact, whatever reason you have each one of us here now, and you've put us in this zip code and this time with these people in our lives, I believe whatever your purpose is for us, it involves us honoring you in the context of relationships. So I just pray that you'd help us get this right, Lord. I pray your blessing upon this church, Lord. I pray your blessing on everyone as they go, as they leave here and go about their weeks. Lord, would you be with us? Would you guide us? Would you give us peace? Would you convict us? And would you help us to grow in your wisdom? In Jesus' name, amen. All right, may God richly bless you, my church. Have a great week, and we'll see you at the picnic. Yeah.